Two translucent rings surround the planet Earth as it spins in space. Written across the globe, a universal picture. A breeze rocks bare tree branches on a rocky ridge. Beneath the ridge, a flat desert plain stretches into the distance, where a mountain range meets the bright blue sky on the horizon. Hunkered by the trees on the ridge, a bare-chested man with wild black hair gnaws on some chicken meat. The man, running bare, watches the desert plain below. A track leads through the barren landscape. A dust trail rises behind something, traveling across the plain. Running bare drops the meat and picks up a rifle. On the plain, a battered light-colored jeep bounces through ground-hugging bushes. At the wheel of the jeep is a uniformed deputy in sunglasses and a brown Stetson. There's a rifle stowed by the driver's seat. On the ridge, Running Bear watches the jeep and stands up, still chewing. The deputy steers his jeep across the bumpy terrain and onto the track. The square-jawed deputy, whose name is Coogan, scans the ground as he passes by in a cloud of dust kicked up by the jeep's wheels. He ignores the two-way radio. Coogan stops the jeep and switches the radio off. On the ridge, Running Bear stands and watches him, blocking the sun. Coogan puts his hands on top of the jeep's windshield and hauls himself up, peering ahead at the desert floor. He spots something and climbs out of the jeep. He walks along the track and reaches down to pick it up. It's a single leather boot. He wipes soil from the sole of the boot. The words Navajo Reservation are branded into it. He looks up. In the near distance, the plain rises into hills. Coogan wanders along the track and finds some more discarded items of clothing. Universal presents Clint Eastwood in Coogan's Bluff. Coogan shakes the dust and soil from the clothes. Co-starring Susan Clark, Tisha Sterling, Don Stroud, Betty Field, Tom Tully. Coogan heads back to the jeep and gets in behind the wheel. With Melody Johnson, James Edwards, Rudy Diaz, David F. Doyle, Louis Zorich, and Lee J. Cobb. Coogan drives further down the track towards the hills. On the ridge, Running Bear takes aim with his rifle from behind some rocks. As Coogan skids the vehicle round a bend in the track, Running Bear hurries down the hillside to a lower ridge. Running Bear holds up his sighted rifle as Coogan circles the jeep just below him. Sun glints off the windshield as Running Bear aims through the crosshairs and fires. He hastily lowers the rifle. There's a bullet hole in the windshield, but Coogan has disappeared from the driver's seat. Running Bear scans around furtively, to his right, then his left, then back down at the jeep. Hearing the noise, Running Bear spins round with the rifle aimed ahead of him. Dressed in a flapping leather loincloth, he scrambles up the rocks. Running Bear's face is lined with deep wrinkles. He scans around. Something hits the rocks behind him. He turns and fires several shots at the rocks. His clothes land at his feet. He spins back around. Standing before him, Coogan fires shots from his pistol that land around Running Bear's feet.
Put your pants on, Chief.
Coogan walks coolly towards Running Bear, who drops his rifle to the ground. Coogan pulls a pack of cigarettes out of his shirt pocket. He puts one in his mouth, then rifle butts Running Bear in the stomach. Coogan lights his cigarette as Running Bear writhes in the dirt, grimacing. Coogan scans the mountains on the horizon behind him. He drives the Jeep along the track through the dusty plain. He pulls up by a wire fence with Running Bear in the passenger seat. There are a few low buildings beyond the fence. With a lit cigarette between his lips, Coogan looks round at Running Bear, who's handcuffed to the dashboard. Coogan frowns to himself, then backs up the Jeep. He drives through the open gate in the fence and sets off past the scattered buildings. He parks up by an open garage and eyes his prisoner in the passenger seat, who shivers and looks groggy. Coogan drives forward, then stops again by a wooden shack. He gets out and walks round to the other side of the Jeep. He unlocks Running Bear's cuffs. He helps Running Bear out of the Jeep and marches him, held by the arm, towards the shack. Under the front porch, he stops and peers through a window nearby. He spots a busty young woman asleep in bed. He sits Running Bear down and locks his arms around a wooden post. Coogan takes a puff on his cigarette. He spots Running Bear eyeing the cigarette as he takes it out of his mouth. He drops the cigarette into the dirt and grinds it with the toe of his boot, then heads across the porch towards the front door. He tries the handle. The door is locked. He reaches up above the doorway and finds the key. He unlocks the door, puts the key back, and goes inside. It's Running Bear on the porch that's singing. Coogan goes into the bedroom in the shack. He takes off his Stetson and puts it on a hook. He stands over the sleeping woman, a blonde, then leans down, removes his shades, and kisses her cleavage.
Coogan.
Mm-hmm. He's still in Phoenix?
Mm-hmm.
Expecting anyone else?
Mm-mm. Mm.
They kiss. She sits up suddenly.
What the hell is that?
Oh, prisoner.
Mm-hmm. What'd you do?
Just killed a woman. Just his wife, that's all.
Oh.
She evades an attempted kiss from Coogan and gets up. She closes the curtains by the window overlooking the porch, then goes back to the bed, where Coogan smiles at her as he takes off his shirt. The blonde, whose name is Millie, kisses him and puts her arms around his muscular shoulders.
How long have you been tracking him?
3 days.
You need a bath.
He picks her up in his arms.
After.
Now.
Now?
Uh-huh.
He carries her out through the bedroom door. A police car speeds across the plain.
Stop!
The car pulls up in a cloud of dust.
What the hell for? Back it up!
Sheriff McRae spots Coogan's parked Jeep.
Go on in!
The police car drives through the gate in the fence. In the shack, Coogan's in the bath. He aims the soap at Millie's cleavage.
You need a bigger target?
There ain't none in this county, baby.
When I assign a deputy to a roadblock, I expect to find him there when I come back.
Morning, Sheriff.
Millie? Ever cross your mind I might just accidentally know what the hell I'm doing?
You mind handing me the soap?
McRae eyes his sergeant, who picks up the soap.
Direct disobedience to orders, dereliction of duty, leaving the signpost. Those are the first three, I think, of there's more.
The fugitive is out on the porch.
I saw him, that's just one thing more.
Get my back, lay down.
That's a prisoner out there, not an animal to be tethered to a rail.
Look, my shirt's in there on the bed.
So what?
There's a badge on it, it comes right off.
You want to play it lonesome boy, fine. You'll get a gutful. Every lousy one-man job that comes along. Got one waiting for you right now.
That's so.
Be in front of my desk in 1 hour. Don't bother to stand up and salute.
The sheriff and sergeant head out.
1 hour?
He grabs her, pulls her into the bath, and they smooch. City of New York. Coogan is on board. He looks down at the densely packed skyscrapers. He wears a high grey Stetson and a smart jacket with a bootlace tie over a white shirt. The soberly dressed man sitting next to him glances over.
Texas?
Arizona.
Pointing outside.
My hometown. Business trip?
You might call it that.
Rancher?
Deputy Sheriff.
Is that right? May I ask what's your...
Extraditing a fugitive.
One of your cowboys step out of line in our fair city?
No, one of your boys stepped out of line in ours.
The passengers disembark the helicopter, which is a Chinook with two sets of rotor blades. Written on the side, New York Airways. Coogan heads across the landing pad, which is on top of a massive concrete skyscraper. Outside the front lobby, he heads for the cab rank.
Head of line, cowboy! That's luggage!
What?
The thing in your hand, that's luggage.
So is luggage.
So it's 50 cents extra for a piece of luggage.
Coogan scowls at the cabbie.
Where to, cowboy?
He gets in with his small briefcase and fishes a note from his jacket.
177 East 104th Street.
The yellow cab sets off through the busy New York traffic. They turn a corner onto a side street. Coogan sits in the back of the cab, scanning from side to side with a fixed frown on his face.
You from Texas?
Arizona.
You the rodeo?
Nope.
Everybody wear them clothes in Arizona?
No, lifeguards wear swim trunks, nurses wear white dresses. What do they wear here?
The cabbie smirks to himself. They pull up outside a building with two uniformed cops by the front door. In leather cowboy boots, Coogan gets out of the cab.
That's $295, including the luggage.
Tell me, how many stores are there named Bloomingdale's in this town?
One, why?
We passed it twice.
It's still $295, including the luggage.
Yeah. Well, there's $3, including the tip.
The cabbie's smirk drops off his face. Coogan heads up some steps towards the building's front door. Written above it, 23rd Precinct.
Oh, sure, you want him arrested.
Now, what's going to happen when we get him downtown? I'll tell you what's going to happen when we get him downtown. You're going to say it was all a big mistake, and you'll swear you fell downstairs just like last time.
But when he's arrested, I feel sorry.
Look, Mrs. Amador, you want something?
Deputy Coogan.
Was that the whole thing?
I'm looking for a Lieutenant McElroy.
Up the stairs. Now, look, Mrs. Amador, why don't you just divorce the bum?
I cannot do that.
You got to.
How can I divorce? We are not married.
Coogan heads upstairs, passing cops and suspects on the landing.
Up there, sticking yourself in the arm of that poison?
When a lady gathers justice, talking, the world is in our case.
Listen, sir, Third Avenue is a public street. We got enough right to it, just as anybody.
Coogan walks in and scans around the room.
Get her.
Look at all that. And 2-inch heels. And workout.
Do you?
Come in. Now we don't have a chance in hell of getting a conviction.
I got a confession.
I'll be right with you. Look, Brady, do you read? Do you take a morning paper? There's such a thing as a Supreme Court. Did you ever hear of it? You can be damn sure De Blasio's lawyer has. What's your problem?
My name's Coogan.
So?
Well, you got a James Ringerman here you're holding for me?
Oh, yeah. Deputy Sheriff, Texas, right?
Arizona. I have the papers for him right here.
I take your word for it. Leave your number with
you
the desk.
You want me to spring De Blasio?
No, you hold him until... Lieutenant McElroy here. No. Hold him until I check with the district attorney's office. You got it?
Yes.
What number?
Your phone number, hotel, where you're staying.
Well, I'm not staying any place.
Well, find yourself a place. Ringerman's not ready.
Oh, why not?
He took a little trip.
Look, I understood that you were holding him in custody here for me.
LSD trip. He's in the prison ward at Bellevue.
In jail?
You want a written report?
Without the search.
Yes.
How'd he get his LSD in jail?
We serve it every day like peanuts at the cocktail hour. Lieutenant McElroy. No. Because I said no, that's all.
Lieutenant.
I want everybody to feel free to just come busting right in here night and day.
It's Mrs. Fowler.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to talk to you.
Look, Lieutenant.
You can't go making out a rape complaint and then just take off. We've got an APB out for that guy.
The streets aren't safe in this town.
Fowler. That's it. Fowler?
Look, when does he get out of the hospital?
Who?
The prisoner, James Ringerman. Who are we talking about?
Oh, when the doctor says he can get out, look, take a couple of days, see the town.
I've already seen the town.
Like orange juice, you'll love Broadway. Ask anybody where it is.
To the old lady.
You made another rape complaint 4 months ago.
Attempted rape.
Coogan sneers at the lady's sneakers.
And I sent a detective up to talk to you at the time.
He tried to rape me, too.
Did I ever try to rape you? Get her out of here.
Lady, you need a psychiatrist.
I went to one and he tried to rape me too.
Oh, out, out!
The old lady is ushered out.
You still here?
Now look, Lieutenant. Suppose I sign a receipt for the prisoner. Then he'd be my responsibility, right?
Look, Tex, there's only one way in this world you'll ever lay your hands on James Ringerman. That's if a New York State judge renders him into your custody. You can't even begin to think about that until they release him from Bellevue.
Well, when will that be?
A week, a month. How the hell do I know? I'm no doctor. Lieutenant McElroy, don't call us. We'll call you. Huh? Yeah. I got it right here on my desk.
Coogan goes.
Sorry I'm late. I'm Julie Roth, your sister's probation officer.
She's an attractive redhead.
How come you never been up to the place?
I've been up there lots. You're never home.
I'll come up some night. I'll show you the roof.
I've seen a roof.
She reads a file.
Hey, that I like.
He fingers her brooch and leers.
You know something? You're pretty good looking for a cop.
Thank you. Next you're going to ask me if I make it with all the good-looking fuzz around here.
Yeah.
Well, the answer is no, not all of them. Nothing you say or do is going to shock or upset me, so let's cut out the nonsense.
The blonde guy, Joe, squeezes her breast.
What do you know? You can feel your heart.
Okay, Joe, you've shown me.
She moves his hand. He puts it back.
Feel that thing beat.
Joe, will you please keep your hands to yourself?
Tick, tick, tick. If you didn't hear the lady, did you, boy?
Cool it, cowboy. There's plenty here for both of us, eh?
Tick, tick.
Smoking a cigarette, Coogan grabs Joe and knocks him to the floor.
What the hell do you think you're doing? And who are you, anyway?
I'm a cop, lady, just like you are.
I don't happen to be a cop. Are you all right, Joe?
Yeah.
Let me see.
Well, look, I'm a stranger in town, ma'am. Not from Texas, Arizona. I just thought...
There was no need for violence.
Oh, well, yeah, I can see that now. I'm sorry about that.
I think you should apologize.
Okay, ma'am, I apologize.
Not to me, to him.
Oh, now, wait just a minute.
No, I don't want no apologies. Just keep that creep away from me, huh?
Joe!
Joe runs off. To Coogan.
Thanks. Do you know how long it's taken me to find that boy?
Well, I'll be glad to go get him for you.
No.
I'll be glad to bring him back, really.
By the scruff of the neck. I wonder why these kids hate cops.
She bends to open a drawer. McElroy leaves his office.
Found something about New York you like, Tex?
Oh. He just calls me, man. Really, my name's Coogan. If I foul things up for you, man, I'm really sorry. I just thought that...
Did you? Think?
Well, yeah.
We don't treat people like that in New York, Mr. Coogan.
Oh, how do you treat them?
I don't think you'd be interested.
Try me.
It's a long story.
Well, I just happen to have some time. Here. Maybe you know a nice little place where we can have lunch and kind of talk about it.
Sorry, Mr. Coogan, you're not my type.
How can you tell?
The hat, maybe.
Well, that comes right off.
Are you dense or just stubborn?
Hungry, mostly. Come on.
He takes her arm.
You know, I'm always interested in new techniques.
In a fancy restaurant, the head waiter checks his watch, then nods at another waiter. The waiter goes over to a table where Coogan and Julie sit facing each other. The waiter clears their plates.
Psychophysiological.
It's a branch of psychology that deals with the fundamental relationships between mind and body. So it's psychophysiological autogenesis. Alphagenics, for short.
Alphagenic?
He looks into her eyes.
I've been experimenting with it up at my place, unofficially.
You live near here?
Not far.
You do this experiment at your house, huh?
Oh, yes, it's much better there. It's warm and informal. At the precinct...
Seems like an interesting setup. Matter of fact...
Thank you.
What do you want?
Your check, sir.
Yeah, I saw it.
It is getting late.
Why don't you just run along, huh?
Yes, sir.
Waiter, just a minute. It's after 3. I have to be going.
Julie takes some money out of her purse.
What are you doing?
Dutch.
You're a girl, aren't you?
There have been rumors to that effect.
Well, you just sit back and act like one.
Oh.
Take everything you can get, that's all.
Is that the way the girls act in Arizona?
That's the way everybody acts everywhere.
You too.
Especially me.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Coogan pays for the meal and dons his hat. Smoking a cigarette, he stands up and helps Julie put her stylish leather coat on.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
He picks up her bag.
I'll take my bag.
That's all right, I'll carry it.
But I have to go now.
Fine, where to?
You don't seem to understand. I have a dozen things I have to do.
Well, good, I'll help you.
But I'll be all day and half the night.
I got nothing but time.
Coogan's boots lie on the carpet in Julie's living room. He sits in an armchair with his feet up on her coffee table.
I wouldn't get too comfortable, Mr. Coogan.
Nobody calls me Mr. with my boots off.
I don't know your first name.
How about just Coogan, without the Mr.?
She pours them both a couple of brandies.
Julie.
Settled on the floor, she looks at him seductively with her pale blue eyes as she drinks.
I don't remember telling you mine.
Yeah, well, it's my police training.
Police training?
Yeah. It's on your magazines here. Name and address. The subscription.
He slips off the chair and joins her on the floor.
How are you?
I thought you wanted to learn about alphagenics.
Oh, I do. I do.
Good.
She sways back as he leans towards her. Then she gets up and switches off the record player.
My files. I only handle young single girls.
Yeah. Me too.
He puts his arms around her as she takes a file from the cabinet. She turns around as he kisses her neck.
Now, briefly. Autogenesis is basically a program of self-regeneration. Hmm. The main point of attack being the...
What?
Core of self-contempt. That is always a principal factor. This we do by means of a tape recorder, which is right here. The program is based on behavioral psychological principles. The position being that all human and animal response is the result of conditioned reflex, which, as you know, is simply a particular bodily response. To a particular...
They kiss.
Terminus.
I get it.
She steps away and composes herself, then answers the phone.
Hello? Yes, this is she. Who? Laura. It's one of my girls.
Oh.
Yes? Oh, not him again. Now, you know that the terms of your probation specifically stated that you... Well, of course it's difficult. I understand that better than you think. Well, yes, he's... But you can always say no, can't you?
No.
She holds off Coogan, who tries to kiss her.
All right, fine. I'll expect you in 5 minutes.
Coogan straightens and frowns, crestfallen.
5 minutes. Yeah.
He grabs his boots, dons his hat, and heads for the door, picking up his briefcase on the way out. He tips his hat and goes. Left alone, Julie purses her lips. Outside, Coogan opens an iron gate. He closes the gate and heads up some steps onto the pavement. He passes a well-to-do couple as he walks away from Julie's place. He crosses the road at a junction and heads past a nearby hotel on the corner. A street lamp shines through the night on the pavement opposite. He stops by the Golden Hotel's front window that looks into the reception. Coogan heads back towards the front entrance and goes inside. The bored-looking receptionist puts a cigarette down.
Yeah?
Single.
How long are you going to be staying?
No longer than I can help it.
All right. Room 304. That'll be $7 in advance.
The sign says 5.
7 without luggage.
Coogan puts his briefcase on the desk.
That ain't luggage.
If the cab driver in this town will give you an argument.
Do you want the room or not?
No, I'll take it.
He pays up, picks up his briefcase and room key, then heads up the stairs. The receptionist rings the bell. A grinning porter follows Coogan up to his room with another room key.
Excuse me, sir. After you, sir.
Coogan enters the pokey-looking room, which has patterned wallpaper.
You really hit the jackpot tonight, sir.
Yeah.
Fell right into it and came up with a rose in your nose. A lonesome lady just down the hall. I think she was stood up on a date tonight. And beautiful. I mean, all the tools.
So long.
No trouble to just give her a little knock on the door.
So long, buddy.
The balding porter walks out. Coogan puts his briefcase down, then goes over to the window and slides it open. He pushes the net curtains aside and looks at the busy street below. A woman in a pink mini dress slinks up to the doorway and loiters there.
Hi.
He looks round.
Help a lady in distress.
Wrong room.
She steps inside and closes the door. She fingers the bed covers seductively as she walks over towards Coogan, smiling.
I'm a girl who never had trouble with a zipper in her life. Until tonight. Be an angel, man.
Up or down?
Well, let's put it this way, sport. You're driving.
He zips her up and slaps her backside.
Out.
What's the matter?
She drapes herself over him.
You some kind of religious fanatic or something?
Come on out.
Right, you cheap bum who needs your lousy action.
Hold on a minute.
She stops with the door halfway open. Coogan walks over and grabs her wrist. She's got his wallet in her hand. He takes it off her and throws it on the bed, then boots her out into the hallway, where she turns and snarls at him.
Texas faggot!
Coogan sits with his cowboy-booted feet on the desk. He looks up from under his Stetson.
You Texas boys get up early.
It's Arizona, and I figured I'd better get here before the cuckoos start gathering.
What do you want?
Ringerman? Now?
McElroy takes off his overcoat.
You've got a problem. You don't listen. Number one. First, you have to go down to the district attorney's office where they check your papers. Affidavit of flight, request for extradition, and so forth. Number two. Then you go down to the Supreme Court of the state of New York, where Judge Acosta renders the fugitive into your custody. But you can't do anything until they release Ringerman from the prison ward at Bellevue, okay?
McElroy leans on his desk and stares levelly at Coogan, who puts his feet down and stands up.
You could get him.
I'm a busy man.
You could walk right in there and get him for me.
Tex, you're getting on my nerves. Say, what gives with you people out there? Too much sun? Let's make it simple. Get the hell out of my office and don't come back until I send for you.
At Bellevue.
Coogan, Paiute County Sheriff's Office. Lieutenant McElroy sent me up here to pick up a James Ringerman.
Ringerman?
Yeah, said he'd appreciate it if you'd snap it up a little bit. See, he's parked out there in the ambulance zone. That man said he'd only stay a second.
The guard opens the metal door and Coogan walks through into the cramped office where another guard sits at a desk.
I'll be kind enough to open this one.
Nope, not without a medical release.
Yeah, well, I understood that medical release went through last night.
Well, not listed here.
Well, it probably just hasn't reached this department yet. If you'll open up here, I can straighten out with the doctor right away.
I can't let you through anyway. He's already got one visitor.
Oh. That's it, huh?
That's it.
Coogan takes out a pad and pen.
What's your name, officer?
What for?
Well, when somebody asks me why Judge Acosta of the New York State Supreme Court's been kept waiting, I gotta give him a name.
Yeah, no, just a minute.
Do I get the name or do I have to have Lieutenant McElroy come up here and get it for me?
Just a second.
The guard frowns and scans around.
Everybody tells me something different. Rudy? Take a minute, see Ringler.
You'll call it that, huh?
Coogan heads through into the cells area.
Call it that.
Well, looky, looky, looky. And they say the West ain't wild anymore.
They include Gibson.
Where the buffalo roam and the deer and the antelope play.
Coogan stops by an open cell. A glamorous short-haired woman in a poncho holds a scruffy inmate's hand. The scruffy inmate sits up and eyes Coogan in the doorway.
Well, well, look here. Coogan. Hey, Lindy, say hello to the fuzz that busted me in Arizona.
Yeah. Man, Burger.
What, you come take me back, cowboy?
Huh?
This cat's got wild vibes.
Hey, man, just pick it up with your vibrations.
You want to know the thing about me? I got this little green worm in my hair. And it glows in the dark. That's the thing about me.
I'm Coogan.
Yes, Rollins told me, yeah. Apparently there's been some kind of mix-up.
Can he travel?
Well, how soon are you planning to leave?
Well, I was trying to make a helicopter in 45 minutes at Pan Am. I'd hate to miss that connection.
Yes, I understand, but there's always danger of residual psychotic reaction to LSD. It can be trouble.
So can I.
You're traveling alone?
Just one of him and one of me.
All right, I'll release him.
Get your clothes on, Ringerman. You're going on another trip.
Keep pushing my regards, huh? Okay? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Does more for me than a kilo of grass, huh?
Put your pants on, boy.
Coogan glowers at Ringerman from the doorway. Ringerman grins a toothy smile and nods. A blue and white cab pulls up at the Pan Am building. Ringerman climbs out first, handcuffed to Coogan, who gets out, straightens his Stetson, and pays the driver. They walk into the building and head up the escalator. With Ringerman still handcuffed to one hand, Coogan has his briefcase held in the other. He looks back at Ringerman, who wears a pair of round sunglasses and scans around the busy departure lounge.
Will all passengers kindly proceed to the boarding area? Thank you. Call for passenger Coogan on house phone 1, please. Call for passenger Coogan on house
phone 1. Excuse me, where are the house phones?
Back there, sir.
Coogan strides over to the phones as passengers head for their flight. As Coogan picks up the receiver, a man in a black hat clobbers him over the back of the head. Coogan drops.
Coogan here.
Wrong number.
Linny looks on excitedly as the man, who wears green cords, clobbers Coogan again. He fishes the keys from Coogan's pocket and hands them to Ringerman, who uncuffs himself. Linny scurries over and takes Coogan's gun. She hands it to Ringerman, who points it at Coogan's head. The furtive trio run off. Coogan wakes up in hospital with McElroy by his bedside.
Green pants.
There's a big bandage around Coogan's head.
Green corduroy and a red sweater.
He had a face?
I told you he was behind me.
Beautiful.
Look, I was on my back and that's all I saw.
All right. From the top, let's start again. From where you bluffed your way into Ringerman's hospital room.
I haven't left anything out.
Thing is, I don't know that for sure.
I told you.
Maybe you'd better come back in the morning, Lieutenant. The patient's in need of some rest.
Just a couple of more minutes, Starkham.
All right.
Look, Coogan, yesterday we had a prisoner in custody. Today we've got a fugitive wandering around with your gun in his pocket. Think about it.
I have been.
We need your cooperation. Because what you remember on the plane going home isn't going to help us get Ringerman right now.
Face down in bed, Coogan turns over and stares levelly at McElroy.
I'm not leaving without that prisoner.
Didn't that whack on the head teach you anything? You're in a whole another kind of ball game. You're out of your league. We've got 28,000 cops in the city. Leave Ringerman to us.
Well, it's gotten personal now, yeah?
Yeah, and a man's got to do what a man's got to do. That it, Wyatt?
Well, that's one way of putting it, Lieutenant.
Well, here's another. Forget it. Understand, that's not just me talking. This comes directly from the district attorney's office. You are not a policeman in the city of New York. Am I getting through?
I still carry a badge.
In Arizona, you're a deputy sheriff. Here, you're just another private citizen with a headache. I'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah, you do that.
McElroy walks out of the room. Coogan turns himself over again and pushes himself up until he's sitting on the side of the bed. Dressed in a thin white patient's gown, he groggily holds onto the bed table and pushes himself up. Standing by a set of closed blinds over the window, he reaches up and takes the big bandage off his head. He gently dabs at the back of his head, where a big plaster sits on top of his hair. He opens the blinds and frowns at the world outside. It's night and the streets are filled with traffic. Day breaks, traffic still fills the city's roads. In his white shirt and bootlaced tie, Coogan leans on the sill of his hotel room window. He goes back into his room and heads for the bed, where he opens up his briefcase. He takes out Ringerman's file and opens it. Next of kin, Ellen Ringerman, 2560 Truckman Street, New York, New York. Coogan enters the lobby of an apartment block and pushes one of the many buzzers.
What do you want?
Ringerman?
There's no such person here.
Police, open up.
I gotta see a warrant. All right! Will you wait a minute?
The angry guy in a dressing gown goes into his apartment and buzzes Coogan through, then opens his door slightly and peeks out.
Upstairs, 25.
The man shuts his door again and Coogan heads off along the hallway.
Out of the way.
Coogan pushes a drunk aside as he goes upstairs. In her apartment, Ellen answers the phone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So it's the cops. Well, let them come.
The bubble-permed Ellen gets off the sofa and opens the apartment door while smoking a cigarette. She spots Coogan on the landing.
Well, 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 what have we got here? Buffalo Bill with the fancy hat. And look, boots with the pointy toes. Very fancy. I'm not impressed.
You, Mrs. Ringerman?
Come in. Come in, Mr. Cowboy. I got nothing to hide. I'm not even asking for a search warrant, because I got nothing whatsoever to hide from nobody.
She spots a neighbor watching them and shuts the door.
Welcome to my palace. Of course, the prince just happens to be out, but that's because the police are just hounding him. Well, you're very polite with your fancy hat in your hand. At least you know how to enter a lady's home anyway.
Where is he, Mrs. Ringerman?
You out of your head? I should tell you so you take him back to jail? You're talking to his mother. Let me show you something.
She walks past him.
Just look what I got in here.
A wooden box.
Look at this. Genuine sterling silver dinnerware. My son gave it to me. And look at this. Hand-painted imported oil painting. Gifts. Gifts from a son to his mother. And look, how many mothers do you know? Just look at this. A fur coat he got from me.
How?
How? He went to the store.
Was it open for business?
You try to be nice, so what do you get? Fancy remarks. Maybe you've been here long enough, Mr. Cowboy.
Look, Mrs. Ringerman, I just want to take him back for trial.
Yeah? I don't usually make no deals with cops.
Be smart if you did.
Smart? Smartness is one thing. Motherhood's another.
Motherhood?
That's what you're talking to, Mr. Cowboy. Motherhood.
She stares up at Coogan, who walks across the apartment and stops in front of a mirror, which has photos of Ringerman around the edge. In one, he's with a girl. In another, on a motorbike with Linny.
He does all right, doesn't he?
24 hours, the phone never stops.
A nice motorcycle.
Bought and paid for with his own money. You want to see his owner's license?
No. Pretty?
Yeah, Linny Raven. That's a name. A certified ding-dong.
Coogan takes out a pen and picks up some paper.
Raven, huh?
He notes it down, pockets it, then dons his hat.
Okay, Mrs. Ringerman. Thank you for the visit. Hmm?
Is that all? Hey, wait a minute. You think you can come in here and write down a name and put on that fancy hat and just go? You know what you were?
Fancy.
You smart-ass cowboy cop! I hope you break both legs!
Coogan walks out. Ellen slams the door behind him, then scurries over to the window and slides it open. She picks up a pot plant and prepares to throw it. Then she spots Coogan on the steps below, being hustled into a car by two men in grey overcoats.
What's going on here? You're under arrest.
What's the charge? Impersonating an officer.
Coogan walks out of a holding cell at the station. He takes something off McElroy, who waits outside the cell door. Julie comes into the room and spots Coogan, who heads past without acknowledging her. McElroy follows Coogan into his office. The drunk guy from the stairs at Ellen's apartment block is there.
I wake up stinking like a goat. No bath. Couldn't even take a shave. Cockroaches. And now because of you, for what?
You met Sergeant Wallace.
Do you know what it means when somebody's got a stakeout like that established and some rockhead walks in and blows it? Oh, damn.
Where do you come off anyway? This isn't the OK Corral around here. This is the city of New York. We've got a system. Not much, but we're fond of it. We don't like it when some two-for-a-nickel cowboy thinks he can bend it out of shape.
Are you charging me or what?
You blew a stakeout! It involved a lot of time and trouble and discomfort for Sergeant Wallace.
Did you think Ringerman was going to come back there?
It's been known to happen.
Not with him, it wouldn't.
Where does it say that you're an expert on Ringerman?
Huh? Because I tracked him down once for 8 days. You learn a lot about a person when you hunt him.
Like what?
Like that he's not a fool, that's what.
Then how in the hell did you collar him?
If you'd asked us about Mrs. Ringman, we'd have told you she's a nut. There's no point in going up there to see her.
I just wanted to get her out of there so I could look the place over.
She wasn't going anyplace.
There's a good chance she would have.
Why?
Well, the same way a small animal leaves the nest going in another direction to throw you off.
What do you know? Woodcraft. It's the one merit badge I missed.
Well, that's too bad. You might have learned something.
About what?
About animals, people. They don't act much different when you're hunting them.
Hold it. Just came for you.
He hands Coogan a telegram. Effective now, you are off Ringham and Case. Return immediately. McCrae. Coogan reads the telegram, then folds it up.
Which makes it unanimous. I took the liberty. You're in flight number 73 TWA. Leaves at 4:15 p.m. They'd like you there a half hour earlier.
He drops the telegram on McElroy's desk.
I'll think about that.
Coogan. I'm through messing around with you. Obstructing justice is a 1-to-5 felony. Forget Ringerman. Because if I even suspect you're nosing around between now and plane time, I'll throw you in the can so fast it'll make your nose bleed.
He opens the door. Coogan walks out.
That's fine. All right, bye-bye.
Judy follows Coogan.
What happened in there?
Nothing much.
Didn't you get taken off the Ringerman case?
News travels fast around here, doesn't it?
Well, I was in the room when McElroy called Arizona.
Yeah, old Sheriff McCrae. He must have really enjoyed that phone call.
He doesn't like you?
Oh, he likes me some of the time. Most of the time, not.
Why?
Oh, looks at me, sees the man who's going to take his job someday.
I believe it. There's the cloisters. Would you like to go through it?
On a concrete overlook, she points out a church on a bluff by the river. Coogan walks away from her and stands alone.
No, thank you, Julie. Some other time.
She heads across and joins him overlooking the city.
Trying to picture it the way it was. Just the trees and the river before people came along and fouled it all up.
Thinking he's out there somewhere. Ringerman, your prey.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Can I tell you something else? McElroy wasn't just kidding. He said he'd throw you in jail. He meant it. Well, he's just trying to protect you. Can't you see that? That's Ringerman's home court out there, and you don't even know the rules. So, do yourself a favor and stop thinking about him.
I wasn't.
Oh, what then?
Worms. Little green kind of ones that glow in the dark.
He walks away from the edge. She follows him over to a statue.
Green worms?
Yeah, green.
You are so enigmatic.
Enig what?
It's a word that keeps coming to mind. Except it's a phony.
It is, huh?
He leans in for a kiss.
There has to be something more to you besides...
What?
I don't know. Love, compassion, humanity, a capacity for pity.
Pity?
You must have heard of it.
Yeah. What color is it?
It's no color.
So you don't know what you're talking about?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about, that's for sure.
Well, color of pity is red.
Really?
Oh, I've seen some once.
Where?
Doesn't make any difference.
Oh, I give up on you, Coogan. I'm looking for a key. Lots of luck. I can't even find the door.
Well, there's a bus station in Prescott, Arizona. It was all over the floor, Biddy. This guy, he felt sorry for a prisoner he was taking in. Let him say goodbye to his wife. He ended up with a 6-inch blade in his gut. The wife had it up her sleeve. So much for pity.
Who was it?
Aren't we gonna have a spaghetti dinner? Or was that just talk?
It was you, wasn't it?
His hat blows off and he catches it.
I'm really ready for spaghetti.
Okay. And thank you.
For what?
He puts his hat back on.
Just thank you.
She steps forward, shuts her eyes, and kisses him on the lips. Place Coogan kisses Julie firmly on the lips. He pulls away and she opens her eyes, then smiles up at him.
But I'll say this. Once you find a subject that interests you, you certainly keep after it.
Why not?
I think we better change the subject.
She carries a bag of groceries into the kitchen.
Alrighty. You know a girl named Lenny Raven?
Yes, I'm a probation officer. What?
I'm just curious, that's all.
It's privileged information, Coogan, you know it.
You were the one who wanted to change the subject.
She hands him a bottle of wine and two glasses. They sit down on the sofa. Coogan pours their drinks.
Tell me about Arizona.
Why don't you come see for yourself?
Is that an invitation?
Now, what's it sound like?
She reaches down to take off a boot.
Here, I'll give you a hand.
He slides it off.
I just have a picture of that.
What?
Huh? Me galloping up to the old corral with my sleeping bag.
She watches him warmly as he kisses her on the knee.
You might be surprised.
At what?
At Arizona. It's part of the Union now.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Electricity and indoor plumbing, TV, all that. You wouldn't even have to bring a sleeping bag. I got all the conveniences.
They sip their wine.
And girls?
Yeah, you might see a stray one of those floating around.
I mean you, girlfriends.
Well, I never took a census, why?
I don't know, I just judge you to be rather busy in that area.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
How about you with men?
Oh, I don't need a census, I can count them.
Yeah.
He gently squeezes her arm.
How do we get back on this subject?
He leans in close towards her.
It wasn't easy. Just fate.
He kisses her on the lips.
I think you may be right.
Usually am.
Are you?
Mm-hmm.
They kiss again. Then she pulls away and gets up.
Dinner.
He gently grabs her wrist as she passes behind the sofa.
Still running?
A good spaghetti sauce should simmer for about 3 hours.
He softly kisses her on the back of the hand, then she goes into the kitchen and shuts the door. Coogan sips his wine as she works in the kitchen. He spies the filing cabinet, stands up and heads over. Glancing back over his shoulder, he opens the drawer marked N2R, putting his drink down on top of the cabinet as he does so. He flicks through the files and finds the one marked Linny Raven. Glancing over his shoulder again, he takes the file out. He opens the file and reads the document inside. He lifts up a card paper-clipped to the top of the document. Julie tastes her sauce.
had one decent spark in your whole body, you... Coogan? Coogan?
Standing in the kitchen doorway, her face falls as she spots Coogan's wine glass on top of the filing cabinet. Coogan heads through a street party by night in his grey Stetson. He goes round a corner, then up a pink staircase. He enters a club called the Pigeon-Toed Orange Peel, which has a massive neon sign outside in the shape of 2 feet. Inside, the club is heaving, filled to the rafters with youngsters wearing bright clothes. Some of the partygoers sit on a balcony section overlooking the busy dance floor, which has flashing multicoloured tiles. A big video screen shows movies of girls dancing. The partygoers on the dance floor gyrate together. Boys and girls shake their long hair. The screen shows a rubber dart landing in a girl's belly button, then a naked pair of buttocks, then explosions in a night sky. Coogan's hat sticks out above the crowd as he shoulders his way through the flailing throng of partygoers. Pink lights shine over the dance floor as the kids bounce up and down wildly. Coogan steps onto the dance floor and walks through the crowd, passing a guy with long hair and glasses just like John Lennon. Coogan scans from side to side. A woman covered in body paint descends from the roof on a trapeze. He catches the topless woman.
Oh! Oh, looking for anyone special?
Honey Raven, is she around?
If you're willing to settle for second best, Nirvana City, back room.
He puts the black-haired woman down and she walks off through the mass of partygoers. Coogan carries on through the crowd across the dance floor. He cracks a smile as pictures of naked women flash up onto the walls around the club. Coogan approaches two nearly identical brunettes with flowers painted around their eyes. The two young women fall into a kiss as Coogan walks past. Two men look lovingly into each other's eyes. One of them strokes the other's face. A giant spider flashes up on a screen. Coogan carries on across the packed dance floor. Coogan arrives in a little room surrounded by walls daubed with psychedelic paintings. He watches with a dubious scowl as a naked girl spins around on a little plinth in the middle of the room. He looks at some of the partygoers at the tables around the room. One guy passes a woman a spliff. She takes a toke and passes it on to a chap in shades. He passes it on to a smiling young woman who also takes a toke and passes it to a young Asian couple sitting nearby. Coogan heads over to the slowly spinning woman who has peace painted across her backside.
There you go, baby.
Linny's with two guys.
Who is your friend?
Oh, this is a wonderful Digby and this is Omega.
I'm Coogan. Been looking for you.
Yeah, well, wild. We were just about to split.
He sits down.
Well, talk to you. Hey, Charlie. Coogan. Coogan.
112 Elwood Street. Way up on the top.
Yeah, I was already up there. And they told me you were down here.
Well, try again. And wear your boots, cowboy.
Wearing them right now.
So you are.
Hey, Charlie.
Still Coogan.
That's Charlie. As in, goodbye, Charlie. As in, ladybug, ladybug, fly away home.
Look, friends, we want to be alone.
Go away, Charlie.
Yeah, while your legs still work.
He whacks Omega with a bottle, then threatens the knife-wielding Digby with the broken stem.
All right, now. Now, I don't like violence, Mr. Wonderful. Whatever your name is, you better drop that blade. Or you won't believe what happens next, even while it's happening.
Linny looks excited. Digby smiles broadly at Coogan.
The blade.
Digby holds the knife out in the flat of his hand.
It's dropped.
Coogan takes it and sticks it into the table. Linny leads Coogan to her flat. There's a sign on the door. No visitors after midnight, unless by appointment, please. She glances at Coogan and smiles, then opens the door. He follows her in. She flicks a light on. A sign beneath the switch reads, "You turn me on." The flat has psychedelic decorations. Linny turns Coogan's face towards her.
What do you have?
What I have what?
With the broken bottle? Gouged him?
He leans forward and kisses her on the lips. She looks up at him.
I don't know, that was up to him.
She turns around and bends double, looking at Coogan upside down from between her legs.
Good heavens! How is everything in Australia?
She straightens. In a pink mini dress and red woolen shawl, she stands face to face with Coogan.
What do you want? Cat got your tongue?
No.
Joe, straight. What's your bag, Joe? Music?
She heads over to the record player, takes off her shawl, and starts the record.
No. Grass. Take grass.
She holds Coogan by the arm, then lets go and picks up a bottle of booze. On a mezzanine level, he pushes aside a multicolored bead curtain.
Juice. A drinking man.
Occasionally.
He heads down off the mezzanine, takes off his hat, and joins her on a pink sofa. He looks at her, then kisses her neck.
Why me, Mr. Cowboy?
Because I liked what I saw in the hospital.
She lies back on the sofa as they continue to kiss.
It's what happened afterwards. I didn't care for it too much.
What are you talking about?
Something about getting sapped in the head has a weird effect on it.
What's sapped?
You know. Liar.
They kiss again.
I never lied to cowboys.
You wouldn't, huh? Do me a favor. Tell me where Ringerman is. I just want to talk to him.
You want Jimmy? I know where he is. Later.
She snakes an arm around the back of his neck and pulls him towards her. They fall into a lingering kiss. Later, they walk through the quiet nighttime streets outside the club. Linny gestures over the road towards a bar called Pushy's. She puts her arm around Coogan's waist. He puts his arm around her shoulder, and they set off towards the bar. As they cross the road, a street sweeper van slowly passes in front of them. A couple of pedestrians cross the road behind them. Inside the bar, there's a pool game in progress.
Come on, shoot. You're gonna take all night?
Great shot.
The thuggish-looking pool players look up at the door as Coogan and Linny walk in. Coogan shuts the door and stands in front of it. Linny takes him by the hand and leads him over to the pool tables.
He's looking for Jimmy Ringerman.
Coogan spots someone sitting in the shadows in green cords.
Pushy. He hasn't got a gun.
Linny smiles at Coogan, then heads up a staircase nearby. Coogan frowns around the bar.
Looking for Jimbo, eh?
Yeah.
The pool players lock the doors and surround Coogan. One of the thuggish players lights a cigarette.
You lost?
He grabs Coogan's hat and puts it on his own head.
You leave your horse, cowboy.
Coogan scans around, then punches the guy in the face. Another thug hits his head. Coogan smacks him back with a pool ball in his hand. He disarms another thug and whacks the guy behind him with a pool cue. Then he jumps onto the table. In the shadows, Pushy flinches as Coogan jumps onto the other pool table and batters away some thugs. One of them throws a box, knocking Coogan onto the floor. Linny watches with a grin halfway up the stairs as Coogan ducks a pool cue. The cue shatters and Coogan punches the weaponless thug. He throws another guy over his shoulder, smashing a painted-over window. A thug in a leather jacket punches Coogan to the floor. He scrambles across the bar as the thug rains down punches. The thug pins Coogan down and they all surround him. They batter Coogan with punches and kicks as Pushy grins and Linny beams delightedly. The thugs hurry out through a back door by the pool tables. Linny heads out after the gang of thugs. Pushy stands up and heads over towards Coogan lying prone on the floor. He takes a puff on his cigarette, then nudges Coogan with the tip of his foot. He kicks Coogan in the ribs. An enraged Coogan rises and grabs Pushy, forcing him back on top of the pool table and punching him in the face. Coogan's own face is covered in cuts and bruises.
Where's Ringerman? Where's Ringerman?
Coogan grabs a pool ball off the table and raises his fist above his head. He prepares to punch. He looks round at the encroaching sirens, then puts the ball down and staggers out of the bar's back door, where he steadies himself on a locked iron gate and stumbles off into the night. The cops batter down the door and head inside the bar. They hear a bin falling in the alleyway and head outside. The cops find Pushy and a couple of other thugs lying unconscious around the bar. McElroy comes into the bar. He narrows his eyes and scans around. He walks over to the pool tables, where a detective tends to Pushy.
Oh.
McElroy spots Coogan Stetson lying upturned on the floor and picks it up and scans around. hotel room. Bare-chested, he straightens and frowns at the door. He steps over warily, then swings the door open. Julie glares at him.
You bastard. Have you any idea of the damage you've done? I'm talking about Linny Raven. I just got her out of jail. She was picked up near that pool room. Do you know what that means? Violation of parole. So thanks to you, Mr. Coogan, she will finish her sentence. And on the way back to her place, she and I had a long talk. She's a painfully graphic little girl. She gave me a play-by-play description of how you slept with her. The boots and...
You came here at 4 o'clock in the morning just to tell me all this.
I thought I saw something in you.
Shut up down there!
Julie hurries away down the dingy corridor. Coogan follows her and grabs her, turning her around to face him.
All this talk about Lenny Raven, is that really why you're so mad?
Julie stares levelly at him, then he lets her go. As she heads off down the stairs, Coogan strides back towards his room. Frowning, he goes inside, then stands for a moment and slams his door shut. Linny sits up suddenly in bed as Coogan barges into her flat. He turns the light on, then marches over to her bed and grabs her.
You're taking me to Raven?
No!
He throws her over the mezzanine balcony onto the sofa, then heads down and picks her up, pushing her around the room and grabbing her by the throat. Her eyes widen as he makes a fist, then he punches a hole in the wall by her head. Coogan ushers Linny outside onto the fire escape. They hurry into the yard together, where he shoves her into an outside corridor. They head into the daylight. Coogan pushes her along a pavement. They continue through the city streets. Follows her across the road in the shadow of tall, bare-branched trees. They enter the park and proceed along a pathway through the trees. Folded across her chest, Linny stops for a moment and glances back at Coogan, who glowers at her. She leads the way up some steps covered in fallen leaves. The arm of his jacket ripped open, Coogan follows her up the wide stone steps. At the top of the steps, she stops and looks back down at him.
Keep going. I'll be right behind you.
In brown cords and a light-coloured suede poncho, she turns around and hurries off along the path at the top of the steps. Coogan slowly starts to walk up the steps, frowning at the trees ahead. Linny runs to a stop further up the path and scans around. There's a gentle slope to one side of her and more trees to the other. Beyond the trees are the outskirts of the city. She sets off along the path again. She stops and looks at the city, then runs further down the path. She heads for a stone church, which has a tall tower at one end. She stops by a portcullis.
What the hell are you doing here?
I brought him here. I had to. You should have seen him. He was going to bust my face open.
Who did you bring here?
The cowboy. He was right behind me and now he's gone.
He raises the closed portcullis and grabs Linny, shaking her violently.
What did you bring him here for? You stupid little freak!
He pulls a pistol and fires into the tree canopy. Coogan peers out from behind an archway.
Hey! Ringerman!
Ringerman fires, misses, then chucks his empty gun away. He sets the portcullis falling and runs off underneath it. Linny follows him. Coogan leaps through a stone window frame and runs over, but the portcullis shuts before he gets there. Ringerman jumps on a motorbike.
Jimmy! Jimmy!
Coogan ducks aside as Ringerman zooms past and hits the road outside. He knocks a couple off their motorbike and stalls.
27 bits! Carl! You damn fool!
Ringerman rides off as Coogan runs down the slope. Coogan gets onto the couple's bike as the rider tends his prone passenger nearby. Coogan speeds off down the road along the bluff, overlooking the river, hot on the tail of Ringerman. Ringerman powers round a corner and hits the pathway through the park. He rides up the path between the trees. Ringerman's hair billows behind him as Coogan, also without a helmet, speeds up an incline right behind him. Ringerman powers over some steps. Coogan makes the same jump, hitting the pathway and speeding round a corner, then up a gentle slope. Ringerman mounts a high path and glances back furtively at Coogan, who speeds along a parallel path just below him. Ringerman slows and stands in the saddle as he rides up some steps. Coogan follows, clipping a stone wall on his way to the top. Nose to tail, Coogan follows Ringerman past some empty benches, then down another flight of stone steps and under an archway. They head down the far side of the park at high speed. Smoke flies from Coogan's wheels as he skids round a corner. They pick up speed as they hit flat ground overlooking the river. Tree branches flash by as they accelerate along the concrete pathway. Ringerman clips a wireframe bin which spins and tips over as they power past. They hit the grass, round a sculpture, and collide. The bikes land in a heap. Ringerman jumps up and runs off on foot. Coogan groggily tries to push himself up as Ringerman heads round a stone wall and nips off into the trees. Ringerman slips and tumbles down a grass slope, then gets to his feet and sprints beneath a stone archway. He grimaces, running down a sloping path towards the main road. A police car with a flashing light on top pulls up. Ringerman turns tail and runs back up the path beneath the stone archway. He grabs a lamppost and takes a few quick breaths, then sets off across the grass. Coogan arrives at the top of the slope and spots Ringerman, then runs across the grass to intercept him. He dives on Ringerman and pulls him to the ground. The pair tussle in the fallen leaves. Coogan pins Ringerman down and punches him in the face. Coogan grits his teeth and hits Ringerman again. Two police cars pull up on the path as Coogan lifts Ringerman by the back of his leather jacket and the back of his belt. McElroy and some officers hurry over. Coogan throws a bloody-faced Ringerman down at McElroy's feet.
I'm making a citizen's arrest.
Take him back to Bellevue.
The uniformed officers drag the groggy Ringerman over to their car. McElroy looks round at Coogan.
I'm getting too old for these police cars.
When do I get them?
First you go to the DA's office. Then the state Supreme Court. Then you don't lay a glove on him until he's officially released by Bellevue. Now, is that all right with you?
Yeah. That's all right with me, Lieutenant.
A New York Airways helicopter lands on top of the Pan Am building. Coogan stands with Ringerman handcuffed to his wrist. Ringerman wears a leather jacket and his round sunglasses. Coogan's in his brown suit. McElroy walks up some steps to join them and passes Coogan his Stetson hat.
Much obliged. Come on.
He walks Ringerman towards the helicopter, then turns to face McElroy.
Lieutenant.
Arizona.
Coogan smiles and nods, then sets off towards the helicopter amongst the other passengers. In red boots and a red coat and hat, Julie runs up behind Coogan and stops him. McElroy watches as she hugs Coogan. Coogan and Ringerman board the helicopter as Julie heads back across the landing pad. McElroy goes. On board the helicopter, Coogan wears his Stetson. In the aisle seat, he puts a cigarette in his mouth. By the window, Ringerman looks round and takes off his sunglasses as Coogan fishes around for a light in his jacket pocket. Coogan takes out another cigarette and puts it between Ringerman's lips. He lights a match, lights Ringerman's cigarette, then lights his own. Julie waves and blows a kiss as the helicopter lifts off the concrete landing pad. She carries on waving as the helicopter heads up into the sky, casting a shadow on top of the Pan Am building. The helicopter hovers away from the tops of the skyscrapers as it leaves the city of New York. ITFC, audio description.